I'm Nish Weiseff.
I'm Amy Sullivan, and this is Impolite Company, a show where we talk about the tricky subjects polite people are supposed to avoid, especially religion and politics.
Our heads are still spinning from the relative speed with which the FBI started and then wrapped up an investigation of Brett Kavanaugh. The Senate voted to confirm his nomination. He was sworn in at a White House pep rally and is now sitting on the bench as one of the 9 justices on the Supreme Court. We need some time to process what just happened, and we suspect that many of you do too.
So this week, we're going to focus the entire episode on fallout from the Kavanaugh nomination. We'll talk about what it really means when some people bemoan the lack of civility, why so many white women defended Kavanaugh, and what role conservative religious traditions play in all of this.
We produce this podcast with the generous backing of individuals who support us every month. If you like what you hear and think these conversations are valuable, then you too can become a sponsor of Impolite Company. Click the link in your player's episode description or visit patreon.com, that's patreon.com/impolitecompanypodcast to sign up. We have some exciting ideas we want to pursue with the show, including an audio documentary and maybe even a movie watching event. I know what you're talking about, and I'm going to need a lot of alcohol. But we need your help to make them a reality. So go ahead and sign up and become a sponsor. Amy.
Oh, Nish. I am better than I was when on the drive back to Chicago from Detroit last Friday, I heard the news about the Kavanaugh nomination going forward. Heard about Susan Collins' speech anyway, and listened to Brave and Fight Song on repeat while sobbing for about 100 miles. And I should say, like, that's not my thing. I usually don't react that way, but it's been a tough couple of weeks, hasn't it? And it was almost the like cumulative weight and emotion of everything that I just... Don't drive angry.
Yeah. And I drove angry. I was in Portland, Oregon for a work thing. I drove to and from Idaho to Portland I drove out on Thursday and drove back on Saturday. So I was on the road and I told myself, like, I can't bring myself to listen to it. I can't bring myself to watch it. Like, I'm not going to do it. And that I had to be a witness almost. Like, I felt like I was being a witness to listen to the vote for them confirming him. And I was on the road. I was on I-84. And when they confirmed him and it was done, I like pulled over on the side of the road and I like let out this like primal scream in my car. And like banged the steering wheel. Like, I was so overcome with emotion about this. And here's the thing. Like, I knew it was coming. Like, we all knew it was coming. We all knew from the very beginning. Of course he was going to get confirmed. He was always going to get confirmed. But to have it actually happen and be a witness to it was enraging in a way that I had not yet been enraged by yet. Like, it was still so visceral to me. I think as someone who has experienced sexual assault, it was particularly painful. And I know that's the same for countless women who watched it go down, who are also victims of sexual assault, who now feel like their assault doesn't matter, that what happened to them doesn't matter. And I think the heaviest part for me, if we're going to talk about like processing, there's a lot that we're going to cover and all these different angles to this. But one of the things that for me was probably the most emotionally heavy was watching other women process their sexual assault and what happened to them in real time and watching them grapple with what had happened to them in high school, in college, that they had buried under the rug or that they had excused away and said, or they never said anything. They never told anyone because they were at a party that they weren't supposed to be at. And there was drinking and there was like, who's going to believe them? Right. And watching so many women deal with this and process this in real time.
And be public about it when they don't have to.
Yeah, no one's asking anyone to.
They're doing it, as you say, to bear witness. And
yep.
In some cases, you know, I was just bowled over by older colleagues of mine, you know, in their 50s and 60s, who are writing about all this for the first time and who know, like, in that instant, all of our other colleagues are going to look at them differently.
That's right.
And just the weight of that and the courage that it takes for them. And yet, as somebody said on Twitter about all of this, it is exhausting to hope that by telling our stories, eventually someone will listen and something will change.
Yeah.
And so for people who might be listening and don't understand, because I've seen a lot of talking past each other in the past few weeks, mm-hmm. that might be thinking, like, what was so horrible about Brett Kavanaugh? Like, he doesn't kill puppies. What what is the deal with this guy? Like, it's not this guy. I mean, you know, would I prefer somebody else? Anybody else? Yes. But.
And there were plenty of other options. Can we say that? Like, they did not have to double down on this guy. They could have canned it.
Yeah. And so to the extent that so many people decided we're going to, you know, make him our rallying point. It was what that said to women and about their stories and how little they matter. Because I think it was Glennon Doyle said, you know, what we finally learned, especially when they were all like, oh yeah, we believe Dr. Ford. What we learned is maybe it's not believe women. Maybe they believe us. They just don't care.
That's right.
And that is harder to take than thinking maybe they just haven't heard enough stories. Maybe they don't believe how prevalent assault and harassment and discrimination are. It's something entirely different when people believe and it just doesn't matter to them. So hearing about Susan Collins was the second time in the drive, actually, that I broke down. The first time I was listening to last week's podcast of what used to be called Double X and is now the Waves podcast. And it was a trio I could not pass up. It was Hannah Rosen and Noreen Malone, who I love. And then Dahlia Lithwick joined them, who is so amazing. And she was in the hearing room during Dr. Ford's testimony. And Brett Kavanaugh's testimony, and so brought that with her. And I recommend everybody listen to that. We'll put it in the show notes. The part that really just got me is Noreen was talking about how she had made a connection. There was some piece of news in the last few weeks about one of the guys from Charlottesville. You know, I think charges had been brought against him, and so that came up in the news again. And she was kind of flashing back to the marchers shouting, "You will not replace us," and realized that's what Brett Kavanaugh's rage was. He's not a white supremacist, but what he was saying and what a lot of his defenders are effectively saying is, "You will not replace us. Women will not replace us. People we consider not as qualified, not as high class, not from the right places, you won't replace us." And, you know, I think that history is going to pass them by, but they have the ability to really screw things up for a lot of people and set a lot of roadblocks up before they're done.
Yeah.
And also, it's not zero sum, dude.
Right.
Like, it's not a matter of replacing. It's a matter of making room at the table.
Equity. It's about equity. And they did. Like, let's be really clear. They did. By confirming Brett Kavanaugh, they set up roadblocks for a lot of things. And obviously, for decades. And most people are obviously, they're like one thing, especially on the Democratic side, that they're going to say is Roe, right? Like Roe is now legitimately at risk. And while that is 100% true, like 100% true, and I'm not minimizing the importance of what that means, what happened with the Kavanaugh nomination has effects that are way more widespread about all the things that we talked about, right? Like the stories of women mattering, how investigations are conducted, who gets to set the scope of investigations and what that means and what the implications are. Like there's just so many things that affect particularly sexual assault survivors because of what happened in this nomination process that I fear will take a long time to overcome. I say that realizing that that may be a cynical take, but I can't help but think it.
I don't think so. I mean, we know that there are girls and women out there right now who have been assaulted, who haven't told their families, and who listened or watched their family members on social media over the past few weeks and now know for sure they can't ever go to them.
Yeah, they won't be listened to. And twofold, right? Flip side of that same coin is what is this communicating to young men about what they can and can't do and what is within the realms of appropriate and what the repercussions are. And what we just told young men is that you can do what Brett Kavanaugh allegedly did, and you will likely get away with it, number one. And not only will there not be any repercussions, but other men will probably rally around you and make sure that you continue your rise to power. Like, that is what was communicated through Brett Kavanaugh's nomination. And so it has implications.
This is your birthright.
Yeah, this is your birthright because you're a male. How nice for you. And one of the things that really ticked me off in the aftermath of the confirmation was watching men, particularly religious men, banter about semantics and all of the different legal points and whatever that happened in the confirmation in the midst of a bunch of women grieving. And I called out a couple of them and said, you know what, like today's just going to be really shitty. So could you really just push pause on your pretentious banter about who's going to be more right and who has the right semantics here? Because there's a lot of us women here that are in a lot of pain and today's going to be terrible. So could you just not? And I saw it more than once. And this, it feels like it continues to fall on deaf ears, that the pain of women continues to fall on deaf ears, whether it's flat out unbelief, whether it's degrading women who have experienced sexual assault, or just being tone deaf and not reading the damn room. Like, could you just take a minute and look around you and figure out what, number one, what's going on? And number two, how are you complicit in this system that has made women feel this way? And some of those conversations that you're having, dudes, about semantics and legal stuff and blah, 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 that at the end of the day, in the face of women's pain, don't really matter. What are you doing to be complicit in perpetuating the pain and subjugation of women? And it's just continual time and time again tone deafness that I don't know, man. I was talking with my friend this weekend when I was in Portland, and I said, I'm just so tired. Like, Amy, I'm tired. I'm so tired. And again, I am a educated, middle-class, white, straight, cisgendered woman. Like, I have a shit ton of privilege, and I'm tired. So I can't even imagine how women and gender non-binary people feel right now. Particularly women of color, particularly disabled women of color. Like, there are just so many aspects to this that I go like, man, if I'm feeling this tired and I'm feeling this shitty, I just can't imagine how more oppressed women feel and how dark this gets the further down the line you go. And it's just, God, I mean, I know this, I'm rambling now, but it just feels so heavy. I'm just so tired.
Well, and the flip side, I'm glad you brought that up, because the flip side of that is one of the exhausting things and dispiriting things to me has been realizing how many, you know, quote, good guys still don't quite get it. Like, it's not a matter of whether they back Kavanaugh or not. It's a matter of, as you said, like, I want you to be enraged about this. It's no longer okay for me to watch you talk about this as an intellectual topic. I don't want to pick on him here because he's been very good and he has learned so much. But, you know, just as one anecdote, a couple of weeks ago, I was just kind of drained at the end of the week. It was, I think, after they both testified, Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh. And Noam was like, what's up? He said, it's been a bad week for women, a hard week for women. And he gave me his kind of like thinking look, like, let's get ready to kind of discuss. And I was like, no, I'm not asking a question. I'm telling you, it's been a tough week for women. And I've heard this from so many female friends who are like, I cannot talk to my husband. I cannot talk to my male friends. Just like, stop. And I keep getting texts from male friends who are like, wow, you seem a little angry on Twitter. I'm like, because I am done. I am done
really?
Modulating my emotions to protect you from my rage.
That's right.
Like, this is how I feel all the time. And you need to see it and then grapple with it.
Yeah.
Because this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah. And here's the, and I would take it even a step further. I have, and I should say, I am really thankful. I'm going to give a little caveat to all this, because I am thankful for the men in my life who have reached out and said like, hey, how are you? This week is really heavy. And just let me be like,
amen.
You know what? It's been really shitty. And I've cried a lot. And I've been, it's just been really dark and really heavy. And them going like, and just simply saying, I can't imagine how you feel. I'm so sorry.
Like, that's all you need
that's
to
all
do.
All you have to say. And I'm so thankful for guys going like, yeah, I can't imagine what you must be feeling. It's so hard right now. And so number one, I'm thankful. I'm so, so thankful for those men in my life who have reached out in an appropriate way and just have done their job of listening.
And also asterisks here, white people, whenever there is a shooting, particularly a killing of a person of color at the hands of police, especially, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You reach out and you don't have to say anything more. Just, this must be really hard and I'm sorry.
Yeah. And mean it. Don't just say it to say it, but mean it. You know what I mean? But the other thing that I would say is, in light of what happened with Kavanaugh, and particularly men who are now awake, you know what I mean? Who are now awake to the pain and rage of women, and understand that this is wrong and know in their mind that this is wrong and say all the right things in conversations with us about how it's wrong. Knowing that it's wrong and being awake to our anger and pain is no longer enough. Now that you know, it's time for you to do something. So in those conversations with other dudes, in those awkward lunches when someone's making a sexist comment, in those, you know, online conversations that you see happening on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, it's your job now, because you are awake and you do know that this is wrong, to use your power, to use your influence and privilege, to speak up on behalf of women who don't have that same power and privilege. That's your job now. It's no longer enough to sit there and go like, you're so right. It's so wrong. I agree with you. Okay, well, great. I'm super happy for you. Yeah. Now go do something about it. go do something. Because here's the thing. It's been made pretty fucking clear this week that women can scream at the top of our lungs about what has happened to us and how painful this is and how terrible it is and how wrong it is. And it doesn't make one damn bit of difference. It doesn't make a difference.
Not only does it not make a difference, but we get dismissed.
We get mocked by the president of the fucking United States for coming out about our assault. We get mocked for it. Mocked. And it's not enough for you to sit there and just agree anymore. It's not enough. You need to stand up and you need to say something. Because obviously what we're doing isn't quite getting the job done. So we're going to need your help. That's what it means to use your privilege and power for the sake of others. It's time to step up and do something. And obviously, one of the first things you can do is vote. But there are a lot of other things that you can do in your everyday life with conversations with other men, in your workplace, in your families, raising your kids, in your churches, in your religious institutions that you can do to stand up for the integrity of all women, but particularly women who are coming forward and talking about their sexual assault. You have to stand up. That, like, end of story. Okay, you talk, because I'm just going to sit here and eat peanut butter M&Ms.
Because one of the things I have, I snarfed down so many Halloween Reese's peanut butter cups last night. I don't think I could fit anything else in me right now. One of the things that I want to just talk about, because I saw it coming up so often from colleagues and particularly men who are publicly, well, they're open about their faith and how it guides them, and usually white dudes.
Do they also have columns in the New York Times opinion section?
We're not talking about them yet. There is a concern about civility. And I want to talk about what civility often is a cover for. Because, you know, we've got the president of the United States, of course, yelling about dangerous Democratic mobs and you know, unhinged tweets about paid protesters who are unpaid. I'm not sure what that was supposed to mean, but trying to rile people up and both dismiss women for their rage, but also raise doubts about whether anybody could actually be that reasonably or honestly upset by all of this. We have a Fox News personality, Todd Starnes, who tweeted, "Those screaming animals in the Senate gallery should be tasered, handcuffed, and dragged out of the building." Screaming animals. Like, those are women you're talking about. And this came up also when the Ferguson protests were taking place. This idea that, oh, we don't have a problem with you protesting. It's just, you know, you're not doing it in the right way. To which people have reasonably said, okay, you don't want people marching in the streets. What if they just kneel, like during a national anthem? Oh, that's not acceptable either? Well, that's weird, because that's not violent. It's not loud. It's not out of control. The key is that there will never be an acceptable way to protest the people who are in power, or never a way that they accept as reasonable. Civility means you continue to accept the way we have set up the conversation, the way we have accumulated power and set barriers in place to prevent others from taking away from it. We want you to return to an idea of collegiality that really just meant we had the only voices that were heard and the only ones that were acknowledged as legitimate. And I'm not okay with that. Sorry. If being civil means that women need to go back to being silent, or they need to just accept when they are ignored, or they need to not tell you uncomfortable things about their personal lives and how you have affected them, then sorry, no, we're not doing it anymore. And if civil means that people of color need to shut up when they are oppressed, need to be quiet and not protest when you take away their civil rights by setting up ridiculous barriers to voting, or just sit by while you let police brutality take place and don't stand up to defend them, then we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Then civility means nothing.
It reminds me of when Jesse Williams, the actor, got up at the BET Awards, and he was speaking specifically about Black people resisting police brutality, talking about systemic racism. So it had a very significant and specific context. But this conversation really brings his quote back to mind. He said, "The burden of the brutalized is not to comfort the bystander." And he said, "If you have a critique for our resistance, then you better have an established record of critique of our oppression." And I was like, oh, hello. And it rang totally true for me, specifically as a white woman, of going like, okay, I better have an established critique of the oppression of Black people, like established critique of that oppression before I even remotely think of opening my mouth about how they are pushing back against that oppression. And I would say, but I mean, the root of what he said applies to any marginalized group and any oppressed group. It's 100% true that if you want to critique the civility of women who have been assaulted, then you better have an established record of critique of our oppression and being assaulted and those systems that have allowed us to be harassed and assaulted for so long.
And ask yourself why you never noticed these issues before. Ask yourself why you were not aware of the extent of harassment and assault. This is what it takes to get your attention. And that's going to make it automatically uncomfortable for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder how much more aware men will be of their complicity in some of these systems if they turn that skeptical eye and that critical eye that they have towards how people are resisting their oppression inwardly. To go, I need to be skeptical here. Like, the first person I need to be skeptical of as a person with power and privilege is myself. And work that through first. If they took that same effort that they use to criticize women or criticize people of color or criticize disabled people or criticize LGBT or trans people, like there are so many different ways in which people of power love to criticize how others are pushing back on their oppression. And I wonder how much different things would be if they took that same critical eye and applied it to their own life.
Yeah. So there is a great line that I read in the last week on a kind of adjacent topic that I think applies here really well, which is somebody was talking about Jimmy Kimmel defending the fact that he doesn't have very many, if any, people of color on his writing staff and very, very few women. And he was saying something like, I don't think it's right to have requirements that I have to have so many people on my staff. Like, you know, if they're funny, they'll rise to the level where I'll notice them. And this woman pushed back and said, you know, I think about it like running an audio board, that it's not that I need to turn up their voices because they're not doing the right things to be heard. It's because you can't hear those frequencies. There's something wrong with your hearing, and we need to fix it so that you're able to hear that. And I just thought that was so powerful, the way that that flips it around.
Yeah, that's a really good image.
There's nothing wrong with us. There's something very wrong with people who don't notice any of this. And then we can talk about what happens when you do notice it and you don't do shit about it. But
That should lead us into our next comment. Our next thing is like, oh, look at all of these white women who realize that there's something that needs to be done and yet they do nothing about it. Look at all the white women who supported Brett Kavanaugh's nomination, even though they knew.
Yeah, they know it's not bullshit. They know these things aren't made up.
No.
How many women do you know who have been assaulted? And then how many men do you know who have been falsely accused of something?
Yeah.
That will tell you something.
Yeah. For
sure. There's just no comparison.
No. There's no comparison. And here's the thing. This is what I'm bumping up against. And I would love pushback and critique on this if there is some to be had. I'm always open ears here. But when it comes to white women and trying to move the needle on white women, like, I'm really taking the critique of women of color to heart here. And I have for several years, and trying to like put my feet forward and do the work and, you know, call out other white women for their complicity and for their racism and for their internalized misogyny and internally, you know, all those things, right? Like, I'm trying to do the work that I've been called to do and have been asked to do. Here is what I'm bumping up against, and I would love maybe some feedback here, is it's really, really hard to have, well, I mean, I'm not going to say it's hard, that's why it's, you know, whatever, but it's hard to have a conversation about something like the Brett Kavanaugh nomination, or really anything related to Trump, with other white women, as long as we are not operating on a mutually agreed upon set of facts, right? Like, I can't have a conversation about, for instance, like criminal justice reform. Like, I can't even begin to have a conversation about criminal justice reform if a fellow white woman does not even believe and will not and cannot make the mental jump to believe that systemic racism is a thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things where I bump up against and I'm like, oh, I don't even know if we can have this conversation because you are not living on the same planet of reality that I am. And that's really, really difficult. And I'm having a hard time figuring out how to do this work and how to confront white women on this stuff, other white women, when we literally just don't agree on what reality is. And I don't know how to move past that. I really don't. And I don't want to say it's a lost cause, because there, I have known women who, over the course of many, many years, have moved on, you know, several issues. I feel like the more women, particularly white women, become entrenched in this like Fox News cycle of bullshit, the less detached they are from actual reality and what the facts are. And I'm having a really hard time. And I don't know about you, but as I have confronted this with women that I disagree with, that's what I'm constantly bumping up against, and I don't know how to combat it.
Yeah.
Except with like the laying on of hands and anointing of oil. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like the level that I'm at right now, is like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to do this? I'm going to need some supernatural powers or something. But yeah. That's kind of where I'm at.
I have even less cred than you do with people who disagree with me, just because I've worked for Democrats and I have for years written as a political liberal. So I am not seen as one of them. But as you know, one thing I've been doing that I continue to think is going to make some difference is trying to figure out how to get more voices of women leaders in positions where some of these white women will hear them. Because I remain convinced that so many women are not lost causes. Some of them are. Some of them have heard everything. You can't tell them anything different. But in terms of enough to be able to change how society thinks, I mean, I try to think, how many of these women ever hear from a woman in power in their church? When they are listening to figures of authority give them information, how many of those are male? I mean, setting aside your Dana Loesches and your Tommy Lahrens. I mean, Tammy. Truly, Tammy, Tommy, whatever.
I just call her, no, I call her Tammy just to piss her off.
I mean, I try to think what it would be like not to have heard from any sources. And I'm not saying like progressive versus conservative sources. I'm saying other women because, you know, your Beth Moores have really become radicalized and outspoken. And I have to think that, you know, it may take time. That's okay. Like we're in many ways, we don't have time to spare, but in other ways, like we can't think everything is going to be fixed next week or next year, or we're all doomed. The only way to change minds is to have relationships and to have trust and to talk to people. And again, like I've got family members, they know me, they love me. They're never going to believe me on this stuff. But there are women who can talk to each other, and it's friendship by friendship. This is how a lot of women ended up solidly in the Republican camp. So I know it does work, because this is how the Christian Coalition flipped people. It's how they got people to only care about one or two issues and convince themselves that the rest of the issues would be taken care of by somebody else or didn't matter as much. If it happened in one direction, it can happen the other.
Yeah, that is one thing that I keep wanting to like harp at, especially with, you know, younger folks, is like, no one else is going to take care of this for you. Like, you have to get up and take care of it yourself. Like, you have to go vote, like go, it matters. Everything that you say and do in regards to political engagement matters. It matters. You have to get up and do something, and you can't expect other people to fix it for you. You just can't. Not anymore. And it is an all hands on deck situation. Not just for this, but for, you know, hundreds of other issues. It's all hands on deck. We can't afford to not have one person sit out who otherwise would be able to. A piece of that is making sure that, you know, we are adequately represented, right? And that those issues of gerrymandering and voter suppression are taken care of as well. But yeah, man, I keep coming back to that too, of going like, yeah, it's no one else is going to save you. Like, no one's going to save you. You need to go and be active. You need to go and like do the thing, do the work.
You know, it's important that there are, say, Southern Baptist women who push back when Paige Patterson has a keynote spot at the convention. It's important that there are Southern Baptist women who are up in arms about the fact that Paige Patterson,
it's going to teach a freaking ethics course.
Yeah, but even better, he's co-teaching with Richard Land, who himself was forced out of his job working for the Southern Baptist Convention because he was racist. Like, these guys are the last people. And what I love is that they are also two who argue that women are not acceptable teachers in seminaries. And we couldn't dare risk having men be tainted by having a woman teach them theology or ethics. But these two clowns, have them just waltz right in and cover it. You learn from who the leading voices are, and you got to change who those voices are.
Yep. And who you give your time and attention to, right? Like, that's it. Who are you going to give your time and attention to?
Which is why this matters now that the nomination is over and he's on the bench. You know, there are all sorts of things to worry about, but churches need to talk about this outside of a hot button political moment. You know, Hillary Clinton is not on the battle. You're not waiting to have your blessed fifth conservative justice confirmed. So now is the time when you need to talk about protecting women and believing women and how important it is to hear from women's voices and why it matters to have women in leadership.
Now, if you can't do it and there's no political reason for you to hold up, even though I think your political reasons are bullshit, you have no excuse. These are children of God.
Yeah. And we will, for sure, hold you accountable to the fact that you didn't speak up when it would politically cost you. You know what I mean? Like, you should have. You should have done it even though it was going to cost you politically. You should have, because it's the right thing to do. But you didn't. And so at least now, like maybe now, now would be a good time. Now would maybe be a good time.
It is the very least you could do. Is the definition of the very least you could do.
The least. Like, we are giving you an option to speak out when there is the least amount of resistance possible, right? Like, you have, there's no cost. There's no real big political cost here. Like, could you at least do it now? Maybe. We're all going to see through it and know that it's, you know, at some level quite disingenuous. But you know what? I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, I'll freaking take what I can get. Like, I'll take whatever I can get at this point because I'm tired. I don't know how many times I can say that. I'm tired. I'm so tired. I'm tired of these patriarchal structures and institutions that perpetuate this bullshit. I'm done. I am so tired.
Well, before we completely wrap up, I want to just throw out, and I was of two minds whether to go here, but you know what? I'm going to, because it further implicates.
Go there.
Just the screwed up patriarchal bent of a lot of our religious traditions, and especially how screwed up they could be about matters of sex. So I have wondered off and on over the past few weeks how much of the concern from some conservatives, and particularly conservative evangelicals, about the potential for false reports and false accusations comes from a dynamic that I have seen a lot in evangelical settings, which is, and you may know instances of this as well, women who become pregnant out of wedlock, and it is almost always the story we're told was that they were raped. And I want to be very, very clear here. I am not accusing them of lying. This does happen, and it happens more frequently than you know. But at a certain point, it just is kind of implausible that that many women would become pregnant the first time as a result of coercive and or assault sex. And it is so screwed up that it is more acceptable in some evangelical communities to say that you were raped than that you had sex outside of marriage. It is so screwed up that is the dynamic that so many places have set up. And again, it's possible every single one of these cases I've heard about was absolutely, that was the case. But I can see why some evangelicals might have some skepticism, even if they can't trace it back to their very own systems that make this a possibility. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there because it has bothered me for the longest time. And again, I don't know 100% one way or the other, but it is something I've noticed, and it is a screwed up part of evangelical culture. And it, you know, then bubbles over because the screwed up parts of your own culture never just stay there. They end up infecting a lot of other things as well.
Yep. One thing that I did want to, I guess, maybe close on to kind of wrap it up is to say it's been a heavy few weeks, and it's for a lot of women, it's been a heavy lifetime of keeping all of this bottled up and finally feeling free to talk about it and having the Kavanaugh nomination go down the way that it did, having Dr. Ford be discredited in the way that she was. It's just been very heavy, and it's been very difficult, and it's been very hard. So I guess my only, like, I don't want to call it piece of advice, but just the only thing I can say is, like, make sure you're taking care of yourself. you know, make sure you're seeking out the help that you need. I'm always going to be your biggest advocate for getting into therapy, whether you are a victim of anything or not. I think everyone should be in therapy. Make sure that you're just getting the help that you need and that you have the support that you need around you to deal with some of this stuff. It's just critical. It's critical just to your own mental health and just to your own well-being. So make sure you're taking care of yourself is the first thing. And take the time you need away to just be sad. Like that's the one thing that I think was also really hard for me in the wake of Kavanaugh being confirmed, is watching social media and everyone immediately going to, like, you know, go register to vote, like the minute that he got confirmed. And I was like, could you give me a fucking minute to be sad? Like, could you just let me be sad for a minute? Like, we know November's coming. Trust me, we know. And we know we need to vote. And we know that things are going to change because of the midterms. And we know that, like, all this stuff matters. We know. But what we also know is that we're hurting. And that sometimes we just need to take a minute. And it's okay. I just want to affirm that for folks to go, it's okay. It's okay to take a minute or the time that you need to process and deal with the bullshit that we've been dealt. And I think it's okay. I think it's okay. You have 100% permission to do that. And when you're ready to, you know, lace up your shoes and go do the work, then go do the work. But I think it would be wrong of us to also demand that victims of assault and survivors of assault are also burdened with the work of having to go make sure this changes. I think it's on everyone, whether you have been assaulted or not, to go out and do the work, maybe on behalf of someone who just can't, you know what I mean? Like, they just can't do it right now. They can't get engaged in the way that is maybe necessary. And so it's up to the rest of us as their community and fellow man just to, you know, step in where they're not able. So all that to say, take care of yourself, take care of one another, be aware, be a good listener, make good choices.
Put on your oxygen mask before assisting others.
That's exactly right. Oh, that's so good. About to hop on a plane tomorrow. That's a really good analogy. Good job, Amy. Okay. You know what? Let's wrap up. And we wrap up the show with our praise and petition segment, in which we shout out the things that are bringing us joy and call out the people in situations who are making us cranky, which obviously we're very cranky right now. Amy, what is going on with you this week? What should we be listening for?
What's bringing me joy?
Yeah, joy. Yeah, no. Wallowing Nothing. In darkness and peanut butter M&Ms.
No, I thought of two things. My dad's surgery went well.
Yay!
Praise the Lord.
Yay,
Amy's Thank you,
dad.
Everyone, for your prayers. Yes. It went so well, and I think it was as much just a mental and emotional relief for him as it was the physical aspect of it, although that does seem to have really worked, that it's just such a joy to see him feeling better and have that weight lifted off of him. Now he's got to go through the cardiac rehab, but that is something we can do. Mm-hmm. So happy about my dad, and I am happy about Trader Joe's apple cider foaming hand soap.
Oh,
because it smells like fall. Yes. And because also now my children actually wash their hands without prompting because they want to smell their hands because it smells like apple cider.
Duly noted.
But I need to also mention and recommend Rebecca Traister's book, Good and Mad, about the history of women's rage in politics.
Ooh, yeah.
I have been waiting for this. Not so patiently. in fact, the past few weeks, there were days when I just thought, I can't take it anymore. I just need to call her and get an advance copy. But I was going to wait and buy it at Barnes & Noble because our local bookstore was not going to have copies until the end of the week. And I needed it the day that it came out. But I will have to say that even reading the history of how women's rage has been dismissed over the centuries makes me so mad that I've had to just read it in little chunks. It's really good. she and I actually had lunch, like the week between Christmas and New Year's after the election in 2016. And I remember she had just come up with this idea for the book. And I was like, well, women are mad, so I can see how that makes sense. But it now completely makes complete sense to me. And there's not a book that I need more than her book. So I recommend that. And for a petition, I've told you this, Nish, but everyone else, I'm going to be at Arizona State University next week discussing / debating this topic of civility with Ross Douthat of the New York Times op-ed page. So, yeah.
I have so many things to say, but I'm going to bite my tongue.
I need to fly in Nish to be my heckler.
/ hype man. I'm going to be your hype man.
/ hype man. Yeah. Yeah. But it's going to be fun. We'll just have to bring
okay.
it.
Okay. I can't wait to read the tweets.
What about
that.
You?
Okay. Besides peanut butter M&Ms, that's what's saving my life right now. A couple things. First one is we are almost through with the third season of Billions on Showtime. Have you watched Billions?
I have not.
It's all about like, you know, not venture capital, but like hedge fund type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of white collar crime things that happen in the show. But anyway, it's got Paul Giamatti, Damian Lewis, Malin Ackerman, a few other folks. I mean, it's just fantastic cast. It's kind of dark, but it's really, really good. Anyway, we've been watching season 3 and it's fantastic. The other thing that I'm really looking forward to is the new Tana French novel. Do you read Tana French?
Yes! I had no idea until yesterday that she had one out. I love her so much. I'm glad you recommended that.
She's the author of the Dublin Murder Squad series, so In the Woods and The Likeness and a few others. Anyway, I don't really like crime
but
novels.
But this is a standalone.
Yes, this is a standalone book.
But it's not crime novels.
Yeah.
They're just so smart and character driven.
I know.
And oh, I love it.
They're so good. I don't usually like them, but I love Tana French. Anyway, she has a new novel out today. Today. It's Tuesday. No, it's Wednesday. So it came out yesterday. Anyway, it is called The Witch Elm. And I am really looking forward to reading it in my spare time. So I am for sure going to pick that up. Also, one last thing that is bringing me joy that I'm really looking forward to watching is on HBO, The Flight of the Conchords have an HBO special, and it is one of my favorite comedy series of all time, is Flight of the Conchords. I find them so quirky and hilarious and funny and just, oh gosh, Kristen Schaal was in the show and like it, just such a great cast, so funny. Anyway, they have an HBO special. I think it's live in London, and I am 100% going to be watching it this weekend. I cannot wait.
That makes me very happy to hear. We have been fans. I want to say we went to see them live in 2006. Like, we were very early adopters, and they are so fantastic.
So funny. Like, there are a couple songs.
Hip-hop-potamus.
Yeah, hip-hop. Oh, God, that's such a good one. There's so many good. God, I could just go down the list. Anyway, so great. Jermaine and Britt, they were actually just on Stephen Colbert, and their interview was, like, really quirky and funny too, just as they are, and it was perfect. It was just pitch perfect for them. Anyway, I'm super excited about that. So that is what is bringing me joy. I'm not going to talk about things that are irritating me because I feel like I did that for an hour.
We've covered that.
We have covered all of my bases. Yes, with the help of peanut butter M&Ms. Okay, that is all for this week's episode. Thank you for joining us. Impolite Company is produced every week by Constantine Hios. If you've enjoyed our conversation, please, please rate us on iTunes. It's the very best way to let other people know about us. And if you'd like to support the show, check out our Patreon page and consider supporting us financially so we can continue to expand these conversations. Until next week, have fun storming the castle, kids!